We'll be speaking shortly with Norman Otis Richmond. Phil, you had a second announcement.
Yes, I did. A cultural announcement. This is called Welcome to Blackhurst Street, which is a play on the words of Bathurst Street as the center of the black community. And this is an art exhibit opening at Markham House, 610 Markham Street, which is right next door to Betsatoon. And that's on this Saturday, October the 15th. This is the opening of an exhibit, and it's from 6 to 11 p.m. So just go and see what's there.
It's going to be how many? It's going to run a while.
It's going to run a while. I don't have the exact dates, but it's not just a one-day exhibit.
It opens on
Saturday the 15th. It's called Welcome to Blackhurst Street, and it's celebrating Bathurst Street and its long history as the center of the black community in Toronto.
Yeah. Boy, they do. I remember Mr. Johnson's bookstore.
Oh, I remember that well. That was a great bookstore.
Wait a minute. Remind me the name.
There was the Underground something.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's funny. I didn't remember that. He was once also on...
No, Third World Books. Third World Books. That's what it was called.
You got it. Third World Books.
Yeah.
And I confess that I once walked in and there was a picture of Marcus Garvey. He was wearing a type of hat from the 19th century. And I made a comment, which I thought was funny, about the hat. And he and I ran around the store for a while, but we're good friends. Yeah. But he was a wonderful guy. We are joined now by Norman Otis Richmond. Are you there, Norman?
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Very good. And you've written an article in Telesert, which is a wonderful site. Some of the best people are there, including yourself. And the title of your article is "Al Prentice, Bunchy Carter, would have rode with Nat Turner." What a great title! So we're going to talk about those two things. Why? Tell us, who is Bunchy Carter, and where does that quote come from?
Well, first of all, the quote came from a young man by the name of Kumasi. Mm-hmm. And Kumasi grew up in the same neighborhood that I grew up in the same neighborhood that Bunchy grew up in. And Kumasi was in prison with George Jackson. And when Al Prentice Bunchy Carter was killed, Huey P. Newton asked Kumasi to take over the Los Angeles chapter of the Black Panther Party. Mm-hmm. And Kumasi turned him down because Kumasi was closer to SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and he was close to a young by the name of Ron Wilkins, a.k.a. Crook. Mm-hmm. And Bunchy Carter grew up in the same neighborhood that we grew up in, mm-hmm. but Bunchy was 4 years older than we were, and Bunchy was the deputy Minister of Defense of the Southern California chapter of the Black Panther Party. Mm-hmm. And he was had joined the Nation of Islam when he was 14 years old.
He had quite a history. He was with he was with the Nation of Islam,
right?
And one of the original people in Los Angeles, and then he becomes one of the original people of the Black Panther Party. He didn't miss any of those trains.
No, the thing I wanted to say about Al Prentice Bunchy Carter was that he joined the Nation of Islam when he was 14. And what happened, no, when he was 16, pardon me, mm-hmm. What had happened is that, you know, everybody, when they talk about Bunchy Carter, they say that he got his consciousness after he got out of prison. But Bunchy consciousness came before he went to prison, because the Nation of Islam, they were called temples. Mm-hmm. Mosque was called the temple.
You said numbers.
Yeah, 27. Which mm-hmm. was a 27th chapter, and Malcolm X formed that chapter, and it was in our neighborhood. And mm-hmm. I went to the temple when I was 14, in 1961. I was just first year of high school. But Bunchy was way ahead of us. He was 4 years older than all of us, and he was. He was a leader in terms mm-hmm. of the undisputed leader of the black community in Los Angeles, California.
Well, partly what we're talking about, of course, is the history of the Black Panthers, which in recent years, it's interesting, the revival of interest and the noticing of the key individuals. And as your article points out, people do know Huey Newton. They know Eldridge Cleaver and
Bobby Seale.
Bobby Seale and Mr. Hutton in Chicago, Hampton. Pardon me, Fred Hampton in Chicago. But Bunchy Carter, in terms of his leadership and building the organization in Los Angeles, after all, is the biggest city in America. Tell us about him. How did he? We know he came to a sad end. He was assassinated on the University of California, Los Angeles campus, January 17, 1967.
69.
Did you say 59?
69.
Oh, 69. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I can't read my own writing. Thank you. And there's two things I guess I should ask you. One, I mean, the assassination, we learn, and you could tell us about it, was a police operation, apparently, inspired. But then there's also just his significance. Why did they target him? What kind of work was – how did he – sort of, how did the Panthers look in the Los Angeles community, and what did people make of Bunchy Carter's leadership?
Well, Bunchy was assassinated in Campbell Hall on January 17th, 1969, exactly 8 years after Patrice Lumumba, Joseph Akito, and Maurice Mpolo were assassinated on the same day, but in 1961. But he was assassinated. It was a divide-and-conquer situation. Many people feel that Ron Karinga mm-hmm. was working for the other side, mm-hmm. and he had an organization. Bunchy Carter came from this area that we came out of. We went to John C. Fremont. The school that we went to was John C. Fremont, and it was on the east side. Mm-hmm. And on the east side of Los Angeles, the first high schools in Los Angeles where black people went to were Jefferson High School and Jordan High School. Jefferson High School, people like Barry White went there, Dorothy Dandridge and Uncle Ralph Bunch. And Jordan High School, Charles Mingus went there, Flo Jo, and Fremont came later.
Uh-huh.
Fremont came later, but we were on the east side. And Jane Cortez went there, Bunchy Carter, mm-hmm. on the west side of the town, Ron Karinga's organization was basically recruited from the west side. So the state created, a division
yeah.
between.
Well, your article says that they had a letter that they produced. It was they wanted to create a vendetta, and they did, a deadly one. By the way,
Bunchy was the Panthers were viewed more of a threat than Karinga. Karinga was talking about culture, and culture is
less threatening.
It's definitely not. I'm not going to attack. Well, I cultural nationalism. When you say culture is supposed to be in front of politics, I don't support that. But the whole question was Karinga said that culture had to come first before a political revolution. And, mm-hmm. They used Karinga's folks wore African clothes. Mm-hmm. I wore African clothes. Mm-hmm. I don't think Bunchy wore African clothes, but Bunchy gave the name to Geronimo G. Jaga Pratt. That's an Indian name. But,
yeah.
Bunchy knew about African culture. So basically, they attempted to say that they created a split between mm-hmm. Karinga's organization and the Panthers organization. And Bunchy was the Panthers, according to J. Edgar Hoover, were the greatest threat to since the Civil War of any other group.
Well, they certainly targeted every center. I mentioned the name Fred Hampton. He was assassinated in Chicago.
He was assassinated. He was assassinated.
That's a horrible story.
In 1969, after Fred was, after Bunchy. They got Fred Hampton,
yeah.
And then they had a shootout at the Los Angeles. A couple of days after Fred Hampton was mm-hmm. assassinated, they had a shootout. That's after Bunchy was died.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Los Angeles chapter of the Black Panther Party held the police off for seven or 8 hours, maybe yeah. 9 hours, and no one was killed in that, that situation.
I want to ask you, and thank you very much for your article. Because people should go to tell us or read this, Al Prentice Bunchy Carter would have rode with Nat Turner. You mentioned this point, that a difference of opinion between the stress on culture, being African, wearing African clothes, et cetera, and as opposed to the Black Panthers and Bunchy Carter. But you also show how he did, of course, bring in the African element, but in an anti-colonial way. It wasn't culturally neutral. He had members of the Panthers swear the Mau Mau Oath, which is reproduced in your article. I urge everybody, if you haven't ever seen the Mau Mau Oath, go and read it. Go ahead. Yes, go ahead. I think he was so excited he hung up on me. This is the Taylor Report. He'll probably call back, or we'll call him. Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And, of course, we're going to try to reach him again. And it's Norman O. Richmond. It's interesting. Otis Richmond. I've always kidded him. He's a man with three names. And if you ask anybody in town, if you say, do you know Norman? They say, yeah. Do you know Otis? They say, yeah. If you know Richmond? So it comes to this. It rings the same place. Phil, this is interesting to me. The Mau Mau Oath, people use this word, and it was terribly twisted. It's actually, in the old days, that was to say Mau Mau was really to accuse somebody of really
being
primitive.
Barbaric.
Barbaric.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, this was a distortion on who these elements were. I think, Norman, you have rejoined us.
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know what's the situation.
Well, we've been talking behind your back. Tell us again about how smart that was. I think it was brilliant that Bunchy Carter would give people the Mau Mau Oath because it attached them to the struggle in Kenya as well as the streets of Los Angeles.
Yeah, I don't know if any other chapter of the Black Panther Party had the Mau Mau Oath, but the Mau Mau Oath was the
that's the Bunchy Clause.
Army, a Land and Freedom Army. And Al Prentice Bunchy Carter was a huge follower of Dedan Kimathi, who was really the leader of the Mau Mau. And in order to join the Black Panther Party in Los Angeles, you had to take the Mau Mau Oath.
Yeah, I
Al Prentice Bunchy Carter also was a huge follower of Dessalines.
Mm-hmm.
He studied C.L.R. James's book, The Black Jacobin in Prison. Mm-hmm. And he loved Dessalines.
He was
really steeped in African and Native American culture, and of course.
Well, we see why Mr. Hoover didn't like him.
And of course, I guess being a Muslim, so he had to know about Islam. But we had on the West Coast. You coming from the West Coast, Chairman Mao Zedong and Zhou Enlai and Chu Te, people in California had a big love for those folks. And I remember when Ho Chi Minh or Mao Zedong came on television, my mother used to call me and says, Norman, your president is on television, So we had a reputation for...
People really ought to be told more of these stories because you're quite right. The photographs were everywhere. They really were. And it was practically in the place of a speech or an article. You just put the picture up, everybody understood.
Let me say this. That there was a guy named Luke Tripp. When I joined the League of Revolutionary Black Workers after I left Los Angeles, Luke Tripp used to ask him questions. And one of his famous quotes is that we are Mau Mau Mauists, and if you have any questions about us, just pick up the latest issue of the Peking Review.
This is modern history, Norman. People don't know this. This is Norman Otis Richmond. The article's in Tel Assur. It published, September 30, but you could find it there. Just write Norman O. Richmond, you'll get it. Al Prentice Bunchy Carter would have rode with Nat Turner. Now, lastly, can you give us your quick review of the movie? The Birth of a Nation. It's about Nat Turner.
Well, The Birth of a Nation, first of all, is not to be confused with D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation.
I assume it's designed to knock it out. It's like
D.W. Griffith's film was a film that Vladimir Ilyich Lenin said that he was so impressed with the cinematography that he said that people should study the cinematography of Griffin's movie.
Yeah.
And C.L.R. James said he used to picket the film at night and go see it during the day because he wanted to see
how it was made.
Yeah, see how it was made.
Oh, this keeps happening in time. Go right ahead. But what about this?
This Birth of a Nation film is from Nate Parker, and there's a big controversy about him, which I guess we don't have time to go into. But
it's unfortunate. It gets in the way of us looking at the film, which we better do, I guess.
Yeah, and it basically tells the story of Nat Turner, who had a uprising in Virginia exactly 185 years ago. There's a piece on YouTube where there's a great lecture, and I can't think of the guy's name, who gave a lecture on the 185th anniversary of the Nat Turner uprising. But anyway, Nat Turner had a successful slave revolt, and I guess his quote was "strike by night and spare none," and he was a preacher. He was influenced by he was a Christian preacher. But I guess he was an Old Testament man. Like he says in the film, he says in the film, the Bible has if you read parts of the Bible, they'll tell the slaves to be passive, and the other parts of the Bible will tell the slaves to the enslaved people to upright to not take oppression. Mm-hmm. So, the film basically shows Nat Turner seeing all of the oppression of African folks, and he basically can't take anymore and rebels, and he has this magnificent uprising and basically shook the
US
plantocracy to death,
It did. It was one of those thunder before the real storm.
And also, Charles Burnett had done a film on Nat Turner before. Charles Burnett also went to John C. Fremont High School. Charles Burnett did a film on Nat Turner. There was a Duke Ellington. We were talking earlier, and Duke Ellington wrote a song about Duke Ellington. Duke Ellington wrote a song about Nat Turner in 1944. And of course, it's never been recorded because African people are supposedly passive. Why would you write about Nat Turner,
Yeah. It tells us a great deal about the wonderful man Duke Ellington. Who was brilliant. We better go.
There was a guy by the name of Major Harris. People know him as the man who sang "Love Won't Let Me Wait." He also was a member of the Delphonics. And he was in the Nation of Islam. I don't know if he was, if he became a Sunni Muslim or whatever, but he had a group in the 70s called the Nat Turner Rebellion, and he was Nat Turner Rebellion, and he became a Delphonic after he had a group in Nat Turner Rebellion, a singing group, right? And he's from Richmond, Virginia, so there's a history of Nat Turner in the Western Hemisphere in America,
yes.
But of course, the narrative is that African people did not resist.
Yeah, no, that was one of the great arguments, and I think it's been settled now. Thank goodness, people like Herbert Aptheker, W.E.B. Du Bois, they settled that issue, and this film is a reflection of the earlier victories, the intellectual victories they won. Norman, we are very grateful you could talk to us. It's a terrific article, Telesur, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
take care. Bye-bye.
Norman Otis Richmond, Telesur. And this is Tater Report, CIT 89.5 FM. We're going to be talking shortly, we hope, with Eve Engler. I guess we have a little music. You might like this.